This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, the poet Sharon Olds, has a new collection called The Unswept Room. She won a National Book Critics Circle Award for her 1983 collection, The Dead and the Living. She was New York State's Poet Laureate from 1998 to 2000, and she chairs NYU's Creative Writing Program. Critic Dwight Garner has said that her work's apparent simplicity can't hide the scalding honesty of her observations. Writer Michael Ondaatje has described her poems as pure fire in the hands. When I asked Sharon Olds if she thinks her new collection has a theme that holds it together, she said no, and then proceeded to describe what she did when she was putting the book together.
At the end of the putting it together, I did what I call my cliche round robin, which was to go through the whole book and see what words I was using over and over and over again and see if I could take any of them out so that it wasn't, I wasn't using the same words in a boring or a cliche way, in an inexact way. Some of the words I remember were like, as in similes, as if, God, love, gold, fire, soft, little, tiny, bright, flame, etc. But that's not really answering your question.
That's a great answer, though. I love the idea of a cliche round robin.
It's very fun. Oh, it was actually interesting to me to notice the words that did not change much. Love and sex and breast, I think those words didn't change a lot. I know that like and as if was very important to me because of thinking about similes and metaphors. But other words like small, little, tiny, bright changed a lot. So in a way, if they were intransigent to being fixed and made better, it made me think, okay, they intransigent, of course, in terms of my taste, my sense of what's okay, what looks okay. Then I figured, all right, I'm not going to fool with that. But if they were, if it was a word that easily changed, then I thought, right, this is a word I just use out of kind of to hold the place for a more exact word, maybe.
Why do you feel like you can't overuse words like and as if? They're the kind of words that a lot of us don't pay attention to. You know, it's as if blah blah blah. You just mm-hmm, say mm-hmm. it. Why do you have to be careful about those words?
When I'm doing my cliche round robin, if I find 50 or 60 as ifs in one book, I want to look at them mm-hmm. and I want to see if it's accurate for my sense of reality and truthfulness, and certainly like to say, oh, I don't know, the sea is like the sky. that could be true to me. But another poet might say, the sea is the sky. Not just a surreal poet, but a very imaginative poet willing to talk transformatively. I use almost no metaphors ever. I use almost only similes. This isn't on purpose. It's just something I've noticed that I do. I think it's accurate to my vision of things because the way I see things, a lot of things seem a lot like a lot of other things. And especially after my run-ins with religious imagination and hellfire Puritanism as a child, I don't want to say that something is something else if I don't think it really is. The struggle for realism in terms of, you know, blood being blood, wine being wine. I say that with respect for those who truly, and I kind of, you know, believe in transformative realities. But I'm in the work of trying to believe in what I can see and hear as real.
Well, we'll get back to this in a moment, but I want to hear a poem. There's a poem in your new collection, The Unswept Room, called The Wedding Vow. It's a poem about love in which I don't think you use the word love.
right.
Why don't you read the poem and then we'll talk about it.
The Wedding Vow. I did not stand at the altar. I stood at the foot of the chancel steps with my beloved, and the minister stood on the top step holding the open Bible. The church was wood, painted ivory inside, no people, God's stable perfectly cleaned, It was night, spring. Outside, a mote of mud, and inside, from the rafters, flies fell onto the open Bible, and the minister tilted it and brushed them off. We stood beside each other, crying slightly with fear and awe. In truth, we had married that first night in bed. We had been married by our bodies, but now we stood in history. What our bodies had said, mouth to mouth, we now said publicly, gathered together, death. We stood holding each other by the hand, yet I also stood as if alone for a moment, just before the vow, though taken years before, took. It was a vow of the present and the future, and yet I felt it to have some touch on the distant past, or the distant past on it. I felt the silent, dry, crying ghost of my parents' marriage there, somewhere in the bright space, perhaps one of the plummeting flies bouncing slightly as it hit, forsaking all others, then was brushed away. I felt as if I had come to claim a promise, the sweetness I'd inferred from their sourness, and at the same time that I had come congenitally unworthy to beg. And yet I had been working toward this hour all my life. And then it was time to speak. He was offering me, no matter what, his life. That is all I had to do that evening, to accept the gift I had longed for, to say I had accepted it, as if being asked if I breathe. Do I take? I do. I take as he takes. We have been practicing this. Do you bear this pleasure? I do.
Sharon Olds reading her poem, The Wedding Vow. It's collected in her new book, The Unswept Room. Now, before you read the poem, you were talking about your religious imagination, how your imagination was affected by your religious upbringing. What kind of upbringing was it? What was the religion you were brought up in?
Well, it was a kind of combination of Calvinism and Puritanism and Emily Postism, though God, neither God nor the devil seemed to have very good manners to me. What had to do with sin, guilt, being wicked, doing everything wrong? You know, kind of typical Protestant, but hellfire Protestant upbringing in my day.
As someone who's really sensitive to language, were there certain words that were used or certain stories that were told in church that had the deepest effect on you?
How interesting. Well, what comes into my mind is, I didn't hear it in church, but I heard it in my mind, roast like a marshmallow forever.
Hell?
Yeah. And for a child, you know, at summer camp, roasting a marshmallow, it's an awful sight to roast a marshmallow when you're a little Calvinist, you know, wicked child. I'm joking about it now, but it was not funny at the time.
My guest is the poet Sharon Olds. She has a new collection called The Unswept Room. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is the poet Sharon Olds. She has a new collection of poems called The Unswept Room. There's a poem I'd like you to read from your new collection called Frosted Elfin. And this poem, to me anyways, I think that this poem is about how a woman might see her own body compared to how her lover might see it. And I'm wondering what got you thinking about this subject.
I wouldn't be surprised if the beautiful little moth that's called a frosted elfin moth may have first started the thinking in this poem, and then Slipper Conch is a beautiful little shell. So probably the excitement of the language of frosted elfin. What a word for a little moth, which had a pretty look, maybe something like a woman's body a little, and then a slipper conch also, that shell, very elegant, sweet shell. And so probably that's all I was thinking. I sure wasn't thinking about anything that comes up in the poem. I had no idea what was going to come up in the poem. The poems kind of, for me, come up on their own. Whatever's in them, I don't see before my pen puts it down.
Well, why don't you read it for us?
Thank you. Frosted Elfin. When I was a child, I could look down over my tummy and see myself, classic and symmetrical, like a slipper conch. If only I had a flower there now, the brown-purple fur of a pansy. My love sees a flower there, but I think of the hair, like hair that grows in the grave, or hair that could sprout all over the face of a daughter, as if the mother had made of her a weensy bearded husband, as if a child could catch hairiness like an illness from the mother's whiskered nether visage. When I close my eyes, I sense the entrance within me like the throat of a blossom. But when I picture it, I think of my mother. When I was in the tub and she took off her clothes, that complex mark, spear in the side and crown of thorns mashed together, lodged a sorrow and dread in me I had thought to take to the grave and grow a silver pubic beard like a sideways bridal veil falls. But my love says, it is sweet beyond sweetness, it is like an oasis. But I saw her from the tub, the bottom of the body like the bottom of the earth. But my love says, it is a wing, a pair of wings, wherein we fly to paradise and through it and to what lies beyond it. I want to be able to look with my own eyes and see what he sees. I will have to put my mother down a moment, just for one moment, Mom.
I like that poem a lot. And I think you've hit on something really interesting there about how a woman can be very self-conscious about her body, or be first introduced to a woman's body by seeing her mother's naked body, and then to realize how differently a lover might see that same body.
Mm-hmm. And I did actually have some thoughts while I was reading it. One was to see with one's own eyes, that whole idea I had been reading. Sharon Dubiago wrote an amazing essay about not only wanting to study the human body in its beauty and its livingness, but to understand all the anatomy. And I think she went even to some autopsy and saw how things were really put together. And I have this book, it's like Transparent Woman, Transparent Man, with veins running all over, up and down, and the bones and the shell and all the nerves with all their names. I love that book. And autopsos is from the Greek to see with one's own eyes. And I just kind of remembered that while I was reading it.
I'm going to ask you to read a poem that was written too recently to be included in your book. And it's a poem that you wrote referring to September 11th. But although this is a post-September 11th poem, it's a very personal poem that's not about how the world changed, but it's more about how your heart changed. The person in this poem finds that she's able to feel happy for her ex-husband, who's found a new lover. And in this poem, she also realizes what a privilege it was to be able to be at her elderly mother's bedside as she died. Let me ask you to read the poem, and then we'll talk about it. The poem is called A Week Later. Would you read it for us? And I should say this was first published in the Atlantic magazine.
A week later. A week later, I said to a friend, I don't think I could ever write about it. Maybe in a year I could write something. There is something in me, maybe someday, to be written. Now it is folded and folded and folded like a note in school. And in my dream, someone was playing jacks, and in the air there was a huge, thrown, tilted jack on fire. And when I woke up, I found myself counting the days since I had last seen my husband, only 3 years and some weeks and hours. We had signed the papers and come down to the ground floor of the Chrysler Building, the intact beauty of its lobby around us like a king's tomb, on the ceiling the little painted plane in the mural flying. And it entered my strictured heart this morning, slightly, shyly, as if warily, untamed, a greater sense of the sweetness and plenty of his ongoing life, unknown to me, unseen by me, unheard by me, untouched by me, but known by others, seen by others, heard, touched. And it came to me, for moments at a time, moment after moment, to be glad for him that he is with the one he feels was meant for him. And I thought of my mother, minutes from her death, 85 years from her birth, the almost warbler bones of her shoulder under my hand, the eggshell skull, as she lay in some peace in the clean sheets, and I could tell her the best of my poor, partial love. I could sing her out with it. I saw the luck and luxury of that hour.
Sharon Olds reading her poem A Week Later. Have you been reading this poem much to audiences?
I have. I happened to get on a bunch of planes last September and October and November, my usual reading schedule, and I kind of started just reading mostly other people's poems that felt to me to have some... I just couldn't do anything else, you know. If I was going to go talk to kids in college, I wanted to take them something that would hopefully maybe help them. And then I would read mine, and I would say, you know, I felt ashamed that I had written something not specifically focused on the actual people who were so close to the people who were lost. But then I thought, well, if any of us tries to write something that's very true and not about our egotisticalness, you know, but just an ordinary person in a not ordinary week, that I hoped it would be okay. I've always had that strong feeling that art is not an illustration of life or a message in a bottle about life, but that it's, in a metaphorical sense, each poem that we really like that someone has written is a little bit like a living being. It's not a living being, but it's a recording or a making or an embodying of a voice of one of us, whether it's autobiographical or not. It stands or falls on its own legs, kind of, rather than on the connections that it has with a life or not a life. I mean, that's just how I feel about it. I think, you know, Terry, we were talking about religion a lot. I think it has something to do, that separation, why it came to me, that I grew up thinking about these worlds, that there was earth and there was heaven and there was hell, and they were all real and they were all simultaneous. And I don't know, I think somehow I got this idea that I don't know, that the jealous Calvinist God couldn't see people's poems, that art was safe from from the evil Puritan God, who, I don't know, we were his art, his sick art, and maybe our art he couldn't punish us for, or I don't, these are just like ideas in a dream.
Well, that's very interesting. Sharon Olds, thank you so much for being with us and for reading some of your work.
My pleasure, Terry. Thank you for having me.
Sharon Olds has a new collection of poems called The Unswept Room. This is Fresh Air.